Hi Keith, thanks for joining me on this podcast, and today we're going to talk about remote practice. So I thought we probably start with, you know, what brought you to this idea of remote practice?
Okay, well, I suppose I've never set out with it as like a central point in my manifesto or anything like that, but it's something I've found myself talking about a lot, especially recently, and it's something I'm quite passionate about. I guess in some ways I'm kind of an accidental advocate for it, but I do think it's really important.
I think there's the elephant in the room while we're making this podcast has been, you know, the world is under pandemic conditions, but I think, you know, I remember with us talking prior to this, remote practice for you is actually more than just about pandemic, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a whole discussion around how we deliver our education and how we provide that. And there's ways that we look to develop that. And some of them are choices that we make and strategies that we adopt. But some of them are things that we almost just have to do, things that we have to integrate or ways that we want to evolve, I should say. And, you know, the big thing there is, I guess, the internet and the hardware that we have to access that, the networks and the mobile devices. And the whole world has been changed by that, and education no less, and probably more than many things. You know, we can't provide education in the same way that we used to. And there are some institutions that will try to bolt this remote practice and elements related to it onto a more traditional form of learning and teaching. And then there are providers who are actually going to make it a cornerstone of what they want to do.
And is there any new technologies you've had to deploy with the campuses in your area?
There are a few. We're lucky in that we've taken the first steps with a lot of these things already. I mean, we have our VLEs, they've been there for years and they're still at the center of what we want to do. Zoom has been a wonderful tool for us. But
Zoom, particularly, Zoom was in practice, we had Zoom in common usage prior to pandemic, didn't we?
Well, that's it, yeah. And for SAE, we've been lucky that an awful lot of what we've done has been remote by the nature of our company. To this date, but new technologies we've looked at. One of the big things has been remote access to facilities on campus. So we have powerful computers sitting unused in campuses that nobody can get to. And by being able to remote desktop into them, we can have students at home anywhere, sitting in an attic somewhere, you know, dialing in with their more basic setups and leveraging the power of those computers that we have so they can actually complete the work, they can use the software, and then all of their files are on cloud storage so they can, you know, come to that from any machine at any other time.
Well that's significant, because when we're talking about new, it may be new to some of the practices we've been using in SAE, but most of what we've deployed has been technologies that existed. It's really been a change to the way we go about things, hence remote practice. So might be worth, before we get too far into it, how would you explain remote practice to someone who's coming new to it? You know, the proverbial landed from another planet, tell me what remote practice question is.
Well, if they've got English language, then it's not too different from what you'd think it might be. It's people in disparate locations or different places working together to collaborate on a project or a piece of work. And that could be anything from sort of office work in any industry to creative media production to delivering education. Remote practice is applicable to all of them.
So basically people not being co-located but being able to effectively work together to achieve, you know, an outcome.
Exactly. And it comes back to that point I made about the connectivity. Once I'm completing my work through essentially through a computer and the toolkit that gives me, then it really doesn't matter if the people in my team are 5 feet away from me or 5,000 miles away from me.
So what are some of the things, just from your experience, that are essential or the most successful strategies around remote practice?
I think it's pieces that come together with some other things, like our learning and teaching approaches, like blended learning. And really it's to do with the implementation of that. So successful practices are... How do I phrase this?
Well, is it when you're not having the teacher and student or the two collaborators in the same place at the same time, there's a level of trust, and I'm not talking about thinking that they're going to be some sort of malfeasance, but about people will carry out work and their work will be then responded to even though it's not done simultaneously or synchronously.
Yeah, definitely. And that the old sort of manacles of the 9-to-5 working idea. I mean, our students don't work like that. I didn't work like that when I was a student. I was up till midnight doing reading and working on projects. You know, people
Well, we're working to deadlines, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. And... People enjoy flexibility in how they meet those targets that are set for them. And if we do remote practice right and the things that go with it, then kind of gone are the days of seeing a student an hour and a half into a slideshow yawning and checking their phone. You know, if remote practice is happening right and we are managing content delivery and the sort of the training rather than the teaching is going online, and we're actually engaging students in how to apply their skills and use their creativity, then we get past a lot of that.
And, well, that's an interesting point about the transfer, because what's the perception of things like lectures? You know, something which used to have which is a very passive learning situation, someone attempting to transfer knowledge to a passive audience. Has that changed your approach to it?
Yeah, completely. I mean, there's a time and a place for sitting students down and talking to them, but it's very limited and it's far less than is ever generally considered at third level education. Looking at the kind of providers that we've seen, or the kind of provision I should say that we've seen coming through in the last few years, I know, say, Open University has been around for decades doing online learning, and that's a remote practice of a kind. But more recently, we've seen the growth of these, the massive online courses, the MOOCs, or learning platforms, including the kind of ones that we use at SAE, like LinkedIn Learning and these kind of platforms. And to kind of misquote an old phrase, you know, there's a YouTube tutorial for that. Anything that we want to teach, that training in the sort of technical use of software and these kind of things, or even some of the theories that we might want to stand up in front of a whiteboard and try to explain to people, that can go into digital content and that can be delivered effectively. And a student who gets bored sitting in a room for an hour and a half, you know, when they have a video, they can pause, they can rewatch, they can rewind, they can actually get the message across. Never mind the fact that we can then use our face-to-face time better to ensure that learning is happening, to engage in deeper discussion about it.
Well, that's a significant point, isn't it? Because if it exists on Google, if it exists in LinkedIn Learning or wherever else, we really shouldn't be delivering that, because that is then just another, well, just not just another resource, but it is a resource that students can access synchronously. It's more about the curation that an educator would provide, the critical feedback. So like you said, instead of sitting there talking at a student, they can go and find the video, and when they come in, we've got more valuable things to do with the student in collaboration. But coming in, because we're talking about remote practice, so no one's coming in. Or do you see this as something, when we return to campuses, that this will change the way we operate in relation to lectures and learning and campus time?
I think it should. I think obviously we've taken a great leap forward along a path that we were maybe walking slowly, and now we need to backtrack a little bit and kind of find the ideal point. You know, our campuses are really valuable and really important, and maybe we'll talk a bit more about them in a minute. But but there are things they do that we can't replace. But leaping suddenly into entirely remote delivery has other issues that go with it, and there is a happy medium of still having our campuses and the vital role that they play, along with the ability for students to engage remotely an awful lot of the time.
Well, let's pick up on that where we shouldn't go, because there's two sides to this, you know, things that we've discovered that are positive. What are some of the things, either pitfalls or things that you've observed that we need to think about more carefully?
Mm. It's really key. I think I don't have numbers or figures to hand, but conversationally, I think we've seen students deferring from campuses in all of our regions because they can't engage completely remotely. And a lot of those students are the ones who are still going to need campuses. I'm a big fan of having these kind of flexible project spaces on campuses. I was lucky enough in a previous job to be quite involved in designing a new faculty building or floor of a building. And the people I worked with, a really good team there who I learned a lot from, but they were really keen on these kind of spaces where, you know, you've got ports for laptops to plug in, you've got projectors and whiteboards and speakers and whatever it might need, and you can kind of move the room around and make it whatever it needs to be.
Bare walls policy, was it?
Exactly.
Come in fit flexible, maximum flexibility.
So with those kind of spaces on campus, you know, the option is there for students to come in. We'll have computers and workstations. The option is there for students to come in. And even if they're doing this online digital content engagement, kind of asynchronous stuff that we've been talking about, they could come in and do that from a computer on the campus, and we want that to be there for them. But we also want them to be able to do it from home. And it's the pitfall is ensuring that equality is there, that students actually have that choice. Because, you know, there are a lot of students who maybe don't have a good working environment at home. They don't have a space where they can set up. There are students who don't have the equipment that we sometimes take for granted. You know, they might not have a laptop or even a tablet. So they can't engage remotely.
Well,
that's a big barrier to entry for some people.
And it is a part of the profile of our student body that SAE has over the years had students from sort of low SES and have used, like so often, the creative arts as a way of lifting themselves out of their situation. And like you've observed, we can't just assume that they'll be fully resourced at home with a stable and an environment that they can control. That sometimes they're working under some fairly difficult situations. So the campus is a refuge. So
yeah,
does that
I
mean
think that's a good word.
We look at also the mobile technologies as well? I know in the third world, it's probably the wrong term now, but the sort of developing economies where mobile technology has leapfrogged the traditional hard infrastructure for communications, and mobile technology is being used extensively in places in Africa and Asia. Where they didn't have the long tradition of communications infrastructure. Is that a clue for us with this group of students that we deal with?
Yeah, it definitely is. And while it's maybe more prevalent in some places, I think even in Western countries, we'd see that a lot of students are using phones and tablets to access the VLEs and to take notes during class and to do all kinds of things. Yeah, I mean, if we're making sure that things are accessible to different devices, then we're just lowering those barriers to entry.
Yeah, and I think, has that changed practice in the UK, SAE UK, where it's not a case of coming into the classroom saying, please put your phones away, but rather, please get your phones out?
Definitely. I'd hope that that's been the case for a while, to be honest. You can't tell students to put away this device they have that gives them access to all of the world's knowledge at their fingertips. You know, that's a learning resource like nothing we've ever had in the world before. And so teaching students how to use that efficiently and how to use it responsibly and actually get the best from that is as much what we do as anything else in this day and age.
Yeah, it can be a real challenge to the educators, but if the educators are failing to engage students and they're distracted, they're just easily distracted now instead of being able to be held captive. Let's turn our attention to remote practice in industry, because employability is an important aspect of SAE programs. And what do you see the connection between remote practice and employability?
So I think it's come into the industry's even more so than it has done into education. I think education is catching up with practice in this regard. I mean, with the kind of workstations that I've talked about, you know, you have your suite of software with your add-ons and your plugins that kind of make it whatever you want it to be and give you all the tasks that you need to complete. And you've got hardware accessories, you know, it might be a little podcast recording kit with an interface and a microphone, or it might be a graphics tablet or whatever else. But we have teams in, certainly in video games creation, any aspect of that, in web development, more and more in audio production, and in certainly media post-production and film post-production. We have teams already working remotely. We have, I can give you examples of people I know where we've had musicians in a recording room in one country, and they're synchronously recording their files into a DAW session in a studio in a completely different country. You know, the technology's there for it.
Even asynchronous, you can have tracking done across continents and will be assembled somewhere else, and the creatives don't have to be not only not in the same place, but not even in the same time zone.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we moved away, you know, digital media is not a new thing by any means, but for a long time we still had the kind of hardware to go with it that shackled us maybe a little bit in terms of location. But once we got our connectivity up and our speed of transfer, we've gotten away from, you know, CDs or DV tapes into just streaming everything. And for the consumer, that's the shift from, you know, CD to Spotify or DVD to Netflix. But for the creators, it's been the same shift. We can now see that production doesn't have to take place in a physical place with hardware. It can all be done through software, and that means that the people doing it can be absolutely anywhere.
Well, that's right. But being a professional in that world, because people can, you know, they can get their garage band and get to a threshold of creating a recording or music without much training. But that just means that the bar of where it means to be professional has shifted, doesn't it?
I don't think it has necessarily.
How so?
Access to tools is great, but proficiency with tools is something different. And it's all very well to us for us to say, you know, there's tutorials, people can go and learn how to produce their electronic music or shoot a film on their iPhone. But there's still a level of proficiency that we want people to achieve in the sophistication with which they use those tools and create those things. And it's great that the last couple of decades has seen this vast emergence of content creation as a hobbyist thing and as an amateur thing, and the sharing of that through the internet. And that's wonderful, and that drives people's creativity and society's creativity almost. But for every sort of indie production where we accept low production values are maybe part of the charm of it, there are still standards of how to do things to the best quality. And we want people to be able to do that and not to have to produce something of sort of charm and indie style because it's the only thing they know how to do.
Well, it's, you know, use a music analogy, you can buy a piano, it doesn't mean you can play it. And it's similar with the software, I get that. But it is about building mastery, like you're alluding to, is this acquisition of mastery. And the practice around that is what we're ultimately talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And the role of our educators, I suppose, with all of the potential resources that are out there is, like we've sort of touched on, it's to be the guide, it's to be the person who helps students to construct their own learning as much as anything else. And remote practice means that we're just more flexible in how we do that. There are more opportunities, and we've talked about how it feeds into industry. And yes, if we want students to go out there and be practitioners, they need to know how to engage in this way, because if they're going to be freelancers or if they're going to work in companies, they're probably going to have to work remotely with people in teams.
Well, there's another critical word there, people. And remote practice isn't just about technology. I mean, we can be misled into thinking everyone says, and when we even started this conversation, what technologies have we got? What is new? What are we existing? But really, when it comes down to it, remote practice has been about learning how to work with people in a different context.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And you're right, completely. I had so as we're coming out of lockdown here in the UK, I met a friend or a couple of friends for a socially distanced coffee a couple of weeks ago. It was the first time I'd seen them in 3 months. And the first thing they kind of said when they arrived was, "Oh, we wanted to see if it would feel weird because we've been talking to you, you know, on Zoom or on Skype or whatever for months now, but we wanted to see if it felt like we hadn't seen you." But it didn't. They showed up and said, "No, I saw you the other day. This is absolutely no different." So
it's interesting, isn't it? That perception. It's a continuum. I mean, when I was first starting out in this business, and we won't say how long ago that was, but we used to talk about cyberspace and how it was so removed from reality. But in actual fact, what we're talking about here is just extensions of reality, and people quite comfortably move between the two. Isn't that the case? So we need to be able to have our students moving seamlessly and expertly across these. And is that how you see remote practice being able to service that employability?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail right on the head there. There's a conception that we have sometimes that, you know, students are digitally literate, that they're kind of born with smart devices in their hands these days and they come in knowing how to use
the digital natives, as they keep trying to coin that phrase.
But the actuality of it is, and I'm sure anyone who's taught a class in the last 10 years will back me up on this, but students come
absolutely
with all of this technology, but they don't necessarily know how to use it. You know, they can't format a Word document or whatever it might be.
Well it's still a source of frustration that essays get handed up or pieces of writing get handed up with spelling mistakes. We've got all the devices. You don't even have to look up a dictionary anymore. But with this remote practice, we are looking at new practices with the rabbit hole or the distraction is technology, but getting back to it's collaborating, learning workflows, being able to, like, again, where we started, having an outcome.
And that's part of it. You know, students will be talking to each other over their phones, on Discord, on whatever else, but that's not remote practice, that's just communications. So we need to teach them how to build a project through that medium of communication, how to work effectively in that way, how to be self-directed. I mean, we deal with self-directed learning through project-based situations and other things, and we've always tried to build that into them, but this remote practice is another level on top of that. I think it's telling them that they have to be responsible for their work, whether they're in the office in inverted commas or not, that actually a task is a task, a deadline is a deadline, and these are the kind of flexible ways that they need to be able to engage with it and to do that.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah.
You've got to deliver. It's probably a whole new podcast, but the question of what it means to be professional. A lot of times people think, if I get paid, I'm professional. But I'd put it to you, and I'd be interested in your view on this, that being a professional means turning up and doing a job on demand, whether you feel like it or not.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think probably you and I and everybody listening to this will be able to cite examples of people they've worked with who were not professional, though they may have been getting paid to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, no one wants to work with that difficult individual. This idea of the artist as the headstrong, emotional, irrational person that has this great singular vision, we know inside the business, nobody works with them because you can't get anything done. That's great for the punters.
Yep.
All right. Well, look, this has been a really interesting discussion, and I think, like you've stated, it's opened up a whole new vista for SAE education and our work with creative media. So thanks, Keith. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you very much for the chance to talk.